Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Seashells and Christmas Bells by Donna Wallow Clancy, narrated by Linda Jones. 1. The warm days of August had turned into the cool days of September. The Shipwreck Cafe owner and his staff could boast of an extremely successful first summer season. It was the Monday after Labor Day, and the kids were back in school. The Cape had returned to its slower pace of life, except on weekends. This was the time of year for tour buses and young couples who didn't have children and didn't want to be around them when vacationing. Jay was enjoying an extra day off, something that hadn't happened all summer. He sat on the picnic table watching his two dogs, Angie, a golden, and Pickles, a black-and-white papillon, frolicking at the water's edge. Looking around at the mostly empty parking lot surrounding his privately owned beach, he was glad the small shack the town employee had sat in all summer while collecting parking fees was now removed for the off-season. He had vowed this past summer would be the last time the town made money off his property. When Anchor Point had sat vacant for 15 years, the town moved in and took over the beach and parking lot areas. They charged over-the-top fees for tourists to park and use the beach while they were on vacation. When Jay and Robbie were young, their family used this beach all the time, no charge. Jay wanted it to go back the way it was, the way it used to be. The fact that the Board of Selectmen knew that Jay Hallett now owned all of Anchor Point, and the government had made no effort to even consult with Jay about continuing to use his property, infuriated him. That was all going to change. A registered letter had been sent to the selectman's office telling them they no longer had permission to use Anchor Point for town use. He was waiting for an answer to the letter delivered to the government official on the 1st of September. "Come on, girls," Jay yelled, clapping his hands. The two dogs stopped what they were doing and looked in Jay's direction. "Come on, let's go," Jay repeated. It had been a long summer, and the dogs hadn't been able to play on the beach with the tourists around. They were not yet ready to leave and went back to playing in the water. Jay laughed, knowing from the moment they arrived it would be difficult to get them to leave once they were there. "Hey, Jay," Robbie called from behind him. Robbie Hallett, Jay's younger brother, was a surfer. Whenever he wasn't bartending at the cafe, he was riding the waves on his favorite board. He lived in the smaller cottage behind the keeper's house where Jay and the dogs lived. "Nice waves out there today," Jay replied. "The liquor order is done, and I am spending the day in the sun," Robbie said as he smiled broadly. "I didn't get as much of a tan as I usually do. I worked more this summer than I ever have before, but my bank account balance is the biggest it's ever been to get through the winter months." "You'll still be working through the winter, but things have really slowed down, so there will be plenty of time to surf now," Jay said, turning his attention to the dogs who had moved further up the beach. "We'll get busy around the holidays again." "What are they doing?" Robbie asked, following Jay's gaze. "I think Colleen the Ghost is calling them," Jay admitted. "She must want to play." "Another ghost that you haven't told me about?" Robbie sighed. "Colleen O'Mara was a 10-year-old girl who drowned when the fallen mist crashed on the point in the nor'easter at the turn of the century. Her body washed ashore, but her mother's body was never found. Her ghost roams the point, calling out for her mother," Jay answered. "That's sad," Robbie replied. "I asked Roland about it, but he said he looked for days and never found the mother's body," Jay stated. "Roland would know. He was there after all," Robbie said, setting his board down and taking his shirt off. Roland Knowles, another resident ghost, was the lighthouse keeper at the turn of the century. He was murdered in 1910 for a pirate treasure that he had found and hidden again. He wouldn't give up the location and died protecting the information. Most of his time was spent up in the lighthouse, looking out over the point. "I was actually coming to get you," Robbie said, picking up his board and strapping on the ankle guard. "The contractors are waiting for you to verify the spot where Mom's cottage is going to be built." "I forgot they were coming today," Jay said, standing up and calling for the dogs. This time, Angie and Pickles responded to Jay's calls and ran to their owner. They had to wait for Pickles to catch up, as her little legs couldn't keep up with Angie's. Leaving the beach, they headed up the road to home. After setting down treats and fresh water, Jay left to meet the contractor. Bill Swan had done all the work on the cafe before its opening. Jay admired his work and his dedication to completing the job on schedule. He insisted that they could have Martha, Jay's mom, in her new home before Christmas. She was staying in the spare room at Jay's cottage, as she had sold her house to move to Florida, but her plans to move had been canceled.
"Bill, good to see you again," Jay said.
"You too. I hear you had a really good first season,"
Bill replied, shaking the hand that had been extended by Jay.
"Ghosts and all."
"We had a great summer season. Roland made his presence known here and there, scaring the daylights out of my customers," Jay chuckled.
"I knew something was funny when my tools kept disappearing in the cafe," Bill stated.
"You won't have to worry about him out here on the back end of the point. He pretty much stays in the lighthouse," Jay informed. "He doesn't like noise."
"I talked to Martha and showed her the plans for the cottage. They had everything she requested included, and she signed off on them. I just need to know if where the orange stakes are laid out is where the house is going to be built."
"Yes, it is. My mom wants her bay window in the living room to look out over the ocean. I think she is counting on Roland to come visit her and wants to afford him an ocean view," Jay admitted.
"Your mom is a hoot. Leave it up to her to want a ghost as a friend," Bill laughed.
"I know. She is unique," Jay smiled.
"We will be up here to break ground on next Monday. The foundation should be poured by Thursday," Bill announced.
"Great. I'll tell her what's happening."
"Jay, can I give you a piece of advice?" Bill asked.
"Sure. Is there something wrong with my mom's house plans?"
"No, this is more serious. Word around town is that you sent a letter to the selectmen telling them the town can no longer use the point for beach parking and collecting fees. Is that true?"
"That was a private letter sent to the board. How the heck did that get around town already?" Jay asked, frustrated.
"I know you moved away for a while, but some things never change. Nothing is a secret around here. Everyone knows everyone's business, including town business," Bill said. "So, it's true?"
"Yes, it is. I want my beach and parking lot to be first come, first serve, and free to the families that come here on vacation. My family never paid a cent to enjoy the beach, and I want it to be that way again," Jay answered.
"Just so you know, there are quite a few people who are not happy with the loss of income that will occur in the town's revenue without the beach fees."
"It doesn't matter who will be happy or who won't be. It's my private property and I will do what I see fit with it," Jay insisted.
"I'm just warning you to be careful. My brother Sid has been a selectman for a very long time and is used to getting what he wants, and he wants to continue to collect those fees."
"I can handle Sid Swan," Jay said. "Legally, he doesn't have a leg to stand on."
"Okay, well, I guess I will see you Monday," he replied. He watched Bill hop up in his truck and drive away. Jay had to remember he was back home, and Anchor Point still had small-town mentality. He hoped Sid wouldn't cause too much trouble over Jay's decision, but his mind was made up, and nothing would change it.
2.
"Hey, boss, what are you doing here? This is your day off," Susan yelled from behind the steamer. "Go work on a late-season tan or something."
"I have some things to check on for the Seashells and Christmas Bells ball that we're holding here. It's still 3 months away, but that time will pass by fast."
"I think it's a great idea to want to preserve the Tunnel of Ships and open it to the public as a museum. History is so interesting," Susan replied. "I am sure you will sell lots of tickets to benefit the project."
"That's a great name, Tunnel of Ships. Do you mind if I use that?" Jay requested.
"I'd be honored," Susan replied.
"Although it's not really the ships that are down there, but items off the crashed ships. I'll have to run that by Roland and see if he approves," Jay smiled, stealing a cup of his mother's famous chowder for lunch.
"The seashell tree is a great idea, too.
Lots of kids will benefit when a shell is plucked off the tree for them. Seashell Friends was genius.
I'm going to put a huge tree up in the lobby on November 1st. People can begin to participate once we get the shells hung on there,
Jay informed her.
All the gifts will have to be returned to under the tree, labeled with the child's name by the night of the ball.
Do you think that you'll make enough money from the ticket sales to complete the tunnel project?
I hope so, but I am not so sure now.
Why? Everyone loves this place and the food you serve. Why wouldn't it be a successful fundraiser? Susan was puzzled.
It appears I am not a very popular person in town right now. I sent the letter I showed you to the selectmen telling them they can't use my property anymore. Word has leaked out about it thanks to Sid Swan.
You know how small towns are. Nothing stays secret for long, Susan sighed.
I was thinking about donating the museum entrance fees to the town in place of the beach fees, but now I am having second thoughts on that, too.
Personally, I think you are worrying for nothing. The event will be a total success.
I hope you're right. I also have the reading of Mr. Peterson's will this month, which isn't going to earn me any brownie points with two locals and their families,
Jay stated. Mr. Peterson, an elderly friend of his mother's, had died during the summer. Before that, his two kids committed him to an assisted living facility off Cape and had abandoned his dog to the streets. The Golden stayed at the lighthouse, the last place where she had seen her loving owner. When Jay bought the property, he fell in love with the dog and took her in. They had been best friends ever since. While seeking help in a previous mystery, Jay brought the dog for a ride when he went to see Mr. Peterson, who immediately recognized his beloved pet. Realizing his children had abandoned her, he cut them out of his will. Jay was made executor, and all the money was left to him to use at his discretion to help animals. Peterson's two kids promised to fight the new will right up to the highest court. Jay had no idea what he had gotten mixed up in, but he would soon find out at the reading of the will. They shouldn't have been such jerks in the first place, abandoning such a beautiful dog the way they did. They deserve to lose everything in favor of the animals, Susan insisted. You know the law. I wouldn't worry about that too much either.
I know, but...
Jay hesitated. You have to remember you are back in a small town. Things blow over as quick as they blow up. Stop worrying, Susan admonished.
I hope you're right. I'll be in my office.
Jay settled in behind his desk. There were bills to pay and schedules to complete. He had also been collecting Christmas catalogs to peruse so he could start ordering items needed to decorate the cafe for the holidays and the upcoming festivities. His mother had offered to help in the decorating process and had quite a few of the catalogs at the cottage.
Much quieter now.
Jay turned to see Roland hovering in the far corner of the office.
Yes, it is, my friend. I haven't seen you around for a while. What have you been up to? Visiting with Martha. My mom loves your visits. I need to ask you something, Jay said, standing up and stretching.
Roland floated over to the window. He seemed anxious about something.
What is it that you need to ask? I would like your permission to turn the tunnel under the cafe into a museum. I want to enclose all the shelves you dug out of the dirt walls behind glass to preserve the items off the shipwrecks. Susan suggested it be called the Tunnel of Ships, but I told her I would have to run it by you. I like that, Tunnel of Ships. Of course, I will need your help in gathering information on the various ships and items that washed ashore after the shipwrecks,
Jay stated.
I want it to be a memorial where visitors can pay homage to those lost out on Anchor Point. Will you help me? I will help you if you help me. What do you need, Roland? You know that I will do anything I can.
Roland looked out the window, sighed, and vanished before Jay could finish his sentence.
I wonder what that was all about. What kind of help can a ghost need?
Jay walked to the window where Roland had been standing. Out on the point, Jay could just barely make out the ghostly image of Colleen. She stood looking out over the ocean, searching for her mother.
Jay knew that Roland still felt guilty, even in the afterlife, that he never found the body of the young girl's mother after the storm.
Maybe it has something to do with Colleen.
Jay finished his paperwork, said goodbye to Susan in the kitchen, and left for home. He planned to spend the night going over the will and legal papers of George Peterson before he had to go to the attorney's office the following Saturday. Although he wasn't actively using his law degree, it did come in handy at times when having to read and understand legal documents. Angie and Pickles met him at the door, tails wagging. The house was quiet. Martha was at the cafe, cooking her well-known chowder. Business had slowed down enough that she only worked every other day or every third day. On her time off, she would visit the hair salon where she used to be a receptionist to catch up on town gossip. Several nights a week, she would play bingo with her group of lady friends. Her life had pretty much returned to normal after deciding not to move to Florida. Jay grabbed a beer out of the refrigerator, then gathered the legal documents he needed to read, and headed to the living room with the two dogs in tow. After starting a fire, he sat on the leather couch surrounded by his furry roommates, making notes of legal avenues to fight the family members who were cut from the will. He was deeply engrossed in the will when a rock came crashing through his front window. The dogs jumped off the couch, barking wildly while running for the front door. Jay flew off the couch and flung open the door. He followed the dogs, who ran toward the road that led down off the point. Jay could see all the way down to the main road, and no cars were traveling away from the direction of the keeper's cottage. He looked over the surrounding area to see if he could spot anyone on foot. Seeing nothing, he called the dogs and returned to the house. Gating the dogs in the kitchen, he put on a pair of rubber gloves and picked up the rock. He untied the twine and spread out the paper that enclosed the rock. In bold black letters, centered in the middle of the paper, was a warning: "Go back to the city." Jay pulled out his cell phone and called his friend, Chief Stephen Boyd.
3. "I have to hire you a full-time bodyguard," Boyd joked as he looked at the broken window. "Seriously, any idea who it was or why?"
Stephen Boyd was close to Jay's family. He grew up in Anchor Point and raised from the rank of patrolman to chief in record time. Liked by all, his intuition and good judgment made him a great asset to the local police department.
"I have a couple of ideas, but no proof," Jay replied. "This is what broke the window."
Jay handed the rock and the note over to Boyd, which he had slipped into a plastic bag.
"Did you handle this at all?"
"No, I was hoping you could check for fingerprints. I used gloves to put it in the bag," Jay answered.
"Good. I'll take this to the lab boys and see if they can come up with anything. Now, tell me, who do you think could be responsible for this?"
Jay told him about who he suspected the most and why. Sid Swan and Greg Peterson's family members were the names on the top of his list.
"I won't question them until we see if we can lift some prints off the rock or the note. I'll be in touch when we know anything," he stated. "Be careful."
Boyd left with the evidence, and Jay found some cardboard to close off where the window used to be. He placed a call to have it repaired, and they promised to be there first thing in the morning. The dogs were jumping on the gate trying to get out of the kitchen. Satisfied that all the glass had been swept up, Jay released the dogs. They ran to the front door, whining. 10 seconds later, his mom walked in.
"What happened?" Martha asked, staring at the cardboard placeholder.
Jay told his mom what happened and admonished her to be careful until they knew who it was that lobbed the rock through the window.
"Honestly, Jay, you get yourself into more trouble," Martha said, rolling her eyes and heading for the kitchen. "Are you going to be here for supper?"
I was planning on it,
he replied, following her. How's swordfish sound? His mother smiled, holding up a plastic bag. I snagged this from the fish delivery that came in today, one of the perks of being the owner's mother.
Sounds good to me. I will be reading George Peterson's legal documents tonight.
Crap, he muttered as he left the kitchen. Jay ran to the living room where he had left the legal documents. They were gone. He dug his phone out of his pocket and called Boyd.
That's right. Whoever threw the rock must have come into the house while I was out with the dogs looking for them.
Well, that was kind of stupid. It points the blame right in the direction of the Peterson kids,
the chief stated.
I'll look into it. Say hi to Martha for me.
Seriously? They were in the house? Martha asked. Do you think it was one of the Peterson kids?
Not the Petersons, older man.
The ghost was standing next to the whalebone mantel, admiring his handiwork.
Have you seen him before, Roland, maybe at the cafe?
No, never.
Thank you, Roland. At least now we know it was an older man. I'll call Boyd back and let him know.
Welcome. Bye, Martha.
Roland shimmered out, and Martha returned to the kitchen to start supper. Jay called the chief back for the third time and told him what Roland had said. If the chief hadn't seen Roland for himself, he would have taken what Jay was telling him with a grain of salt. But the ghost had been such a tremendous help in catching Bee's killer. The chief couldn't ignore anything Roland said. Jay's next call was to George Peterson's attorney, who promised to overnight copies of all the documents that had been taken. He also informed Jay that he had already had several contentious meetings with the Peterson's attorney, and George's kids weren't going to go down without a fight. The attorney ended the call by telling Jay he would see him Saturday morning. Martha and her son enjoyed a quiet dinner together. Much of their discussion centered on the Christmas ball that was going to be held at the cafe the second week of December. They perused the catalogs that Martha had brought home from the cafe while they ate, and chose items to be ordered that fit the theme, seashells and Christmas bells. Jay also needed to order 100 4-inch plastic scallop shells to be hung on the big tree in the front lobby near the door. They would write numbers in red marker on the inside of the shell and place them on the tree. Each number would correspond to a list containing the name of a child or family who needed help at Christmas. The list would be locked in Jay's office, so the names of the donors and the names of the people receiving the gifts would remain anonymous, known only to Jay, Robbie, Martha, or Kathy, the head hostess.
We have accomplished quite a bit tonight, Martha said, collecting the dishes off the table. I'm going to put the dishes in the dishwasher and go to bed.
Well, I'll clean up. Go ahead to bed, Jay offered.
Okay, if you insist. See you in the morning.
Jay watched his mom walk away. His mind wandered back to a couple of months ago when he thought he had lost her. He never realized just how much she meant to him until she was almost gone. He vowed at that point to spend as much time as possible with her and to give her the best life he could. She deserved it. Dishes finished, he grabbed a beer out of the refrigerator and went to sit in front of the fireplace with his dogs. Staring into the flames, he thought about Roland's treasure for the first time in months. The ghost insisted that it would never be found, and Jay took that as a challenge to find it. Roland's journal has confiscated as evidence in B. Thomas's murder trial, but at the trial's conclusion, Jay would get it back. Jay had made copies of every page before he turned it over to the police, and he kept the small key and a piece of paper he found hidden in the front cover of the journal. Once the holidays were over, Jay would have lots of extra time on his hands to look for the treasure. By then, he should have the original journal back from the police. The one item Jay never relinquished or reminded anyone he had was Roland's gold pocket watch. The front of the watch pictured the ship, the Fallen Mist, in raised detail. The back had the ship's name and the date of the crash the ship was destroyed out on the point.
It was forged out of melted gold that was part of the pirate treasure Roland had found. Roland always carried the watch with him, as a reminder that he was responsible for the ship crashing the night of the storm. The light had gone out in the lighthouse, and he couldn't get it lit again because of the fierce winds. He tried repeatedly, but failed. In his heart, he felt he had caused the deaths of all those aboard the ship because there was no light to guide them away from the rocky shore of the point. The watch had been placed in Jay's safe. No one had asked about it, and he didn't offer any information on it. He wasn't going to let it out of his possession, as Roland had told him that it held the key to the location of the treasure. He finished his beer and shooed the dogs off the couch. Pulling out the sofa bed, he decided to sleep on the first floor because of the missing window. The dogs were already on the bed and asleep by the time he got back from the bathroom. He crawled under the sheets, staying to one side so as not to disturb his furry roommates. 4. The next day, Martha had agreed to stay at the cottage until the window was fixed. Jay left for work, as he needed to enter the payroll into the computer, as well as the following week's schedule. Plans had been made to join Cindy at the Burger Box for lunch, and all the paperwork had to be finished before Jay could leave for his lunch date. Cindy Nickerson was Jay's girlfriend in high school. He broke up with her when he left for college and law school. He never forgot about her, and they rekindled their relationship when he moved back home. They agreed to take things slow, but so far Jay hadn't dated anyone else since his return. "Jay, you just got an overnight delivery package. I signed for it," Kathy said, setting it on his desk.
"Thanks. It must be the replacement papers that were stolen from my house last night," Jay stated, reaching for the envelope.
"I heard about that. The dogs weren't hurt, were they?"
"They're fine."
"Before you ask, I heard about it at the coffee shop this morning," Kathy said. "I also heard that Sid Swan is not a happy camper right now. None of the selectmen are either since they received your letter."
"Such privacy," Jay mumbled.
"No such thing in this town," Kathy retorted, going out the door. Martha was home with the dog, so Jay could leave the cafe directly for town and his lunch date. Cindy motioned for him to sit in the corner booth near the front window. Minutes later, she had shed her apron and joined him. The Burger Box was a popular place, good food and reasonable prices. The fact that it stayed open year-round made it the place to go for lunch. Today was no exception, as the place was packed. As the couple sat enjoying their seafood chowder and BLTs, Sid Swan appeared at the end of their booth.
"Hello, Sid," Jay said, looking up from his lunch.
"Are you really going to go through with this?" he demanded in a loud voice.
"Sid, this is not the time or the place to discuss this. I received your letter for the meeting between myself and the selectmen, and I will talk to you then," Jay answered.
"No, we will discuss it now," he insisted. By this time, all eyes were on the two men arguing in the corner of the restaurant.
"Your brother told me that you were used to getting your way. Selectmen or not, I don't answer to anyone. You want to get into this in front of everyone here? Fine," Jay said, standing up. "It is my land and my beach, and I can do with it what I see fit. You mooched off the land for the last 15 years without permission from the previous owner, but I won't be such a pushover."
"You do realize we can take the land from you by eminent domain?" Sid asked, red in the face.
"You can try, but you don't have a legal leg to stand on. When the judge finds out how you treated the previous owner and how you didn't even ask my permission to use privately owned land this year, you will get laughed out of court," Jay stated.
"You think just because you've returned to Anchor Point as a wealthy attorney that you are better than the rest of us?" Sid fumed. "You are taking town revenue out of our meager budget, and it won't sit well with the locals, the working locals who can't afford to have their taxes increased to cover the loss."
"I think you should leave now, Sid," Jay stated in a firm voice.
"What? You don't want people to know what kind of person you really are?" Sid yelled. You want them to know who I really am? I am opening a new museum on...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?